Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening, welcome to the Fulham Fans Show with me, Matt Beadle, and the guys from Fulhamish, Dom and Cam. Fellas, we're going to get straight into it. Sky Sports strikes again. In August, games away at Huddersfield and Cardiff have been moved to a Friday night. How angry are you about this?
It's just annoying because with three like really good away days, like, we'll be Saturday 3 p.m. We had enough of the Premier League with fixture moves, you know, Sunday midday, Sunday 2 o'clock, Sunday 4 o'clock, Saturday 12:30. Before we're back in the Championship now, we'll be having all our lovely Saturday 3 p.m. kickoffs back. Clearly not.
Definitely not. And you know, if this was a home couple of ties as well, you have no qualms of that because you could get up to Craven Cottage for, you know, 7:45 kickoff. But for the majority of fans, especially booking the time off to get to Huddersfield and Cardiff, it's going to be such a slog for them. And it's just so irritating, isn't it? I was exactly the same as Dom. You know, get a three PMs back, love it. Get down the pub on a Saturday. No difference about it at all. It'll be absolutely beautiful. But yeah, it's going to cause a little problem. So we're going to get the same old tosh from, you know, Huddersfield and Cardiff fans. Oh, you don't bring anyone away. It's like, oh, come on, give us a bit of a break here. Everyone's at home sitting, watching it on TV, aren't they? Cheers, Sky.
Well, it's like Huddersfield last season when that was on a Monday night. It was like, well, we're not. It's going to be on TV, so a lot of fans don't really fancy trekking down there on a Monday night, especially the one last season, which was, like November or something?
It was like minus 10.
It was so cold. It was so cold that night. But I think the most annoying, it's not actually the game's been moved on a Friday night. I think it's that if a game gets moved somewhere away on a Friday night and you can get back the same evening, I don't think there's too many issues made about it. You know, we've had Forest away midweek before, we've had Rotherham away midweek before, and you can get back from them because there's ways to get back. But these two, you've got no chance, and it just means you've got to take a day off work to get there. You've got to pay for a hotel to stay, and it's a Friday night. It's going to be expensive. It's just more money that we didn't need to spend.
There is a plus to all this. One, actually, you said there, you get to take a day off work. There are worse days to spend off work. Two, it's in August, so you can hope that the weather might be good. Like you said before, that Monday night fixture was moved in December. This isn't at the height of winter. There is a chance this could be a lovely Friday, summer's evening, enjoying a few beers before the game.
It'll be a top night out, without a doubt.
Yeah, but make a weekend of it.
Yeah, exactly. But I think what the main issue here is sort of like, I don't. If it's like Sky are not looking at these fans going to these games saying, well, how are they going to get back? They don't care about that. And that's the most annoying thing here, that, you know, I don't fancy really driving back. I don't fancy driving there. So you're going to have to stay. And it's like you spend £40 on a return train. You spend, another 30 quid on a hotel. It's just not needed.
It's where money monopolises football, doesn't it, really? It doesn't matter about the, you know, the everyday fan of what it is now getting to matches in Cardiff and Huddersfield on a Friday night. It's not easy. It's not cost-effective at all. But for them, it certainly is because, you know, they know the majority of fans aren't actually going to be able to make that trip, so they're going to get their money by people actually tuning in and watching it. So,
well, I mean, look, this is a huge issue that crops up week to week now, it seems, with football. You only have to look at the Europa League final for that, and the fact that Chelsea and Arsenal had to go to Baku. Most of them didn't. A sparsely populated stadium on that occasion. Is there an argument here, Dom, that, you know, the likes of National Rail and Sky and the Premier League should all sort of form at the beginning of the season and go, look, this is what we can maybe do together in order to help fans get to and from these games?
Yeah, I don't think the issue is necessarily Sky moving the game to the Friday night. It's not like they've done it with like 2 weeks in advance. Like, we've got plenty of time in advance. It's just, I don't know if that, they could speak to someone like National Rail and they can put like a one train on back to London from Cardiff at what, if you half 10 or 10:45 or whatever, because, you know, game 7:45 kickoff, game will be done by what, quarter to 10, you get back to Cardiff for that. I know it's like it's extra work for them to do, but it's the least they can really do after messing fans about so much.
Just a bit of a bumper package with the tickets, right? And be great for synergy if, you know, two companies in that sense work together with like train outlets and football clubs. It could be very beneficial from both parties if that were to happen. So yeah, it wouldn't be adverse to that if it was going to arise. But come on, it's just not going to happen. It's all down to Sky, and that's just how it is. Really, we've just got to get an Uber back, boys. That's all it is. You know, spend a good 300 quid for that. No worry.
They have Uber up in Huddersfield.
They definitely have it in Cardiff, because one of my worst ever Uber journeys was in Cardiff. So when I say worst, I mean, I left one place and my destination ended up being the place next door. So I left one bar to go to another place, which we said we were going back to, and then all my friends were like, oh no, we're just going to go next door. So my Uber journey on the app looks hilarious, because it just starts at one place, goes around in a circle, and comes back to the place next door.
Was this for an away day last season, was it?
This was the FA Cup game a few years ago. That was 11 a.m. in the morning, I think the kickoff
was. Bearing
in
mind, this is Dom at home and away games as well.
This wasn't needed. I just don't see why, like, realistically, right? Who really wants to watch Fulham versus Huddersfield?
I do.
Who's not a Fulham or Huddersfield fan?
No one.
Yeah. the point for putting a game on TV is because the neutral will want to watch it. I don't see... Fulham Carlever can maybe understand, because there was sort of the rivalry there with us going up together and all that happened when we got promoted together that everyone knows about. But I just don't see who else apart from Fulham and it was like when it was on the Monday night.
Apart from
the two teams, who actually wants to watch this game?
It was such a nullified occasion, wasn't it? You know, both teams trying to scope each other out, you know, put the feeders on each other, and it, you know, it was just such a dull game in that respect. So I don't really understand the reason why it's been, you know, moved on that occasion to be on the TV, because it's not necessarily the most, you know, riveting of games it could have possibly been. But hey, this happened now. You're not going to be able to argue with the superpower of Sky. So let's just get on with it and see what comes in the next couple of weeks, you know.
So my next question then to the both of you is, are you going to go?
I'm already booked.
Well, there we go. There we go. Instantly, already booked. What, the day that it was announced? Bosh, train tickets.
You know, obviously going to go up in price, aren't they? So you got to snap them up early. I think that... Yeah, I mean, I was not going to go. I still don't think it's a good thing from Sky, or it's just a way that no fans can get back. But, you know, I'm still going to go. I mean, I'm trying to think what would make me not go to a game. I mean, this would be really, really, really interesting thing to discuss. Like, how bad do the circumstances have to be for Dom Betts to not go to a Fulham game?
I don't even think family bereavement will stop you from going to a game, Dom.
No,
I really don't.
probably not.
I'm thoroughly enjoying your rage against the machine here, mate. You've moaned and moaned and moaned about this. Have you booked it? Oh, yeah, I did it 2 hours ago. Yeah, I'm definitely going, 100%. I'll be there.
Yeah.
But Sky, right?
Yeah. I can play as much as I want. They've got me around the ankles, and I'll still just buy.
Well,
to go there.
Do you know what? This is part of the problem, right? I'm not going to say that it is a problem, but fans speak with their feet, and the whole "we're not going to turn up for the first 10 minutes of a game" thing, in my opinion, is complete nonsense, because you still turn up for the game. So who cares if you're not there for the first 10 minutes? The powers that be couldn't give a monkey's. So the only way that you can protest against this, and we heard the Sky Sports chant many times last season, I think Leeds spearhead that chant that was dumbed down by the Sky microphones every time it appeared. But the only way you can try and get this sorted is by not going. And as two massive Fulham fans, that's never going to happen, right?
No, because everyone says, talking about football fans as customers, they're not customers. Because customers can just change, I don't know, if they got change their energy company or change their phone network provider if they don't like it. You can't just do it with your football team. You can't just change and support another side. That just doesn't work.
Exactly, unless you're someone like Drake, you know, who just puts on football shirts for the fun of it. But
he just chooses whoever team he wants to lose, basically. Because every time they have a picture of him, they always seem to mess up. And I think, I think it is that we're not actually customers in that respect, because customers can, you know, will complain and usually get some sort of, you know, not refund, but some sort of compensation, or they can move to another company. You can't just move to another football team unless you stop supporting Fulham entirely and I go support my local team, Tottenham Mitchum. Like, that's the only option really there. And, you know, Fulham is... It's not just that you're going to see a football team every week. You're seeing your mates every Saturday or every Tuesday night. You know, there's times when it comes to the summer and, you know, when there's no major tournament on it. Like at the moment, it comes to Saturday, I was like, right, what am I doing?
Yeah, there's a whole social aspect that goes with supporting a club. Imagine if you were yo-yoing and bouncing between clubs and just being one of those guys which is a diluted fan. You know, you go there to be part of something. And, yeah, the tickets and, you know, Sky moving games, it does annoy, and it is quite, you know, frustrating. But at the same time, totally with Dom, I'm not going to stop supporting my club. I'm not, you know, going to games just because of a little bit of a ticket in, like, TV. Problem at the moment, it doesn't work like that. You support your club through thick and thin, even if TV gets in the way, so who cares?
Have either of you ever opted to stay at home and watch Fulham on TV when a game's been broadcast? And have you decided to not go to the game because you knew it was going to be on TV?
No.
Not once.
No, if you've got a ticket for that game, especially, and it's built up in advance, then why would you? You'd rather be there and, you know, experience it for yourself. I mean, there are days where you're feeling a bit ropey after a night out and you've got to go up to Craven Cottage. But then again, for us boys, it only takes 5 minutes to get there, so
yeah,
it's easy.
I feel like the only time... The time when I lived away from England for 6 months. Like, when Fulham was on, I didn't care. It's a weird thing for me. I don't care unless I'm there. Like, if I'm not at the game and the game's like at 3 o'clock and I'm not there and it's on a stream, I won't go and seek out to try and watch a stream. I'll just see what the result is later. It's a weird point. I only actually care if I'm there, if that makes sense.
If you're immersed in it.
Yeah. I'm not one to, like, if I'm talking about last season, if I'm looking at just not even fun games, but just games in general, I probably watched more games in Serie A and Liga than I did actually in the Premier League, because I really wasn't that bothered by it. And I think, yeah, as I said, I'll look at the result when I'm away, but I won't take time out of my day if I'm on away to look for a result. It's something when I have to be there to sort of be immersed and pay attention to it.
See, I'm a bit different than that. I mean, I've got my girlfriend's sister's wedding coming up in August, and it's on a Saturday as well. And I've been banned from taking my phone or any kind of, device where I can actually watch any football at all, because they know I'm just going to be sat at their back screaming my head off if Fulham are playing. So I've already been on lockdown for that. So wherever I am, if Fulham are playing and I'm not there, I'm always trying to catch it, be at work, you know, be on a train, be at my nan's. It doesn't really matter. I'm just going to be watching football. So, yeah, regardless, yeah, if I can't get to Huddersfield, I'll still be watching it on Sky. I've got a subscription. Might as well make the most of it if Fulham are on TV. But otherwise... yeah, can we just stop moving games around and let us have our fun on a Saturday, lads? Come on.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. 100% agree with you. And actually, if we look at the games from last season, the Huddersfield one can only be better, right? What, 2-1?
Can be worse.
2-1-0ers to either team. The Cardiff one, to be fair, was that cracker, that 4-2. I know that you ended up on the losing side, but it was a very decent game, entertaining to watch. Was that the game where Schürrle scored that worldie?
Andre Schürrle, hate the bloke, but fantastic goal. Yeah. Give him that. Pat on the back, lad.
Well, yeah, I'm so thankful Babel scored a goal against Cardiff, just Andre Schürrle didn't have to win goal of the season.
That was
one of the highlights of my season, just to make sure he didn't win or get any recognition for none of his work throughout the entire season. But yeah, if Huddersfield away last season, it can't be worse than that. Freezing cold, Monday night, Timothy Fosu-Mensah own goal. It can't be worse,
no.
Surely.
And no biting intent whatsoever from any of our attacking boys at all. So it can only be better next season.
Ranieri at its finest.
Especially if we keep holding Mitrovic and the boys around him as well. But we'll come on to that a bit later, I'm sure.
Definitely. Well, if you keep hold of Mitrovic, that is the big talking point. We're going to be discussing that after the break, along with Jean-Michel Seri, easy for me to say, also Ryan Sessegnon, and some more transfer rumours. This is the Fulham Fan Show.
Love sports.
Hello, this is the Fulham Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and the guys from Fulhamish, Dom and Cam. Now, we're going to move on to a guy whose name I always struggle with. I'm not going to lie to you. Jean-Michel Seri. There we go.
Nailed it, mate.
Say it slowly and it's a lot easier. Now, big signing last summer amidst the 99 million war chest that Slavisa Jokanović splurged in the summer. Didn't go too well for him. Seri was one of those. £25 million.
Well, who knows how much he paid.
We were led to believe that it was that much, right? Apparently it was manipulated. Who knows? But signed along with Le Marchand, right? It hasn't worked out for him. Is he going to leave?
Yeah,
I think going to the end of the season, you knew out of the players we signed permanently last summer, it's Jean-Michel Seri or Michel Seri, whatever we're going with, was most likely to leave. I think the thing is with Seri, he started the season really well. I think up until the Brighton game, which was first weekend of September, I want to say, he was actually probably our best player so far, and then he sort of just dropped off after that. You know, that Palace game at home, which we lost 2-0, but he was spraying passes, which we haven't really seen from a Fulham midfielder since probably Moussa Dembele left to go to Spurs. And, you know, he was really promising. We're like, oh, what a player we've got on our hands here. And it's after the Brighton game, away from the moment which we drew 2-2, he just sort of dropped off.
We saw fleeting flashes of Big Mike's potential in the midfield. Like you say, he's metronomic at times. He had such a stranglehold on possession and really looked like he was bedding himself into Slavisa's midfield really, really well. And that goal against Burnley at home, especially, you know, it sort of floated towards the target like a Zeppelin. You know, it just, the trajectory on it was absolutely perfect. And at that point, you're sort of looking at him and going, he's a top, top, top central midfielder. And it's exactly what we need if we're going to be, you know, staying afloat in the Premier League. But I totally agree. After that, he just seemed to lost the wind in his sails a little bit. He looked deflated, a little bit dejected, disinterested out on the pitch. He wasn't linking up with his midfield components as much as he should do. And from there, it was a bit of a downward spiral. We've noticed that ever since. So, Yeah.
So, I mean, did anything spark that, or was it purely a case of the fact that Fulham as a whole weren't playing that well?
Yeah, I think if we start the season well and the results were going, let's see, if you look at some of the games, you know, that Brighton game, let's say, we shouldn't have drawn that. We should have won that game. We were 2-0 up away from home, and you can't be... Cessignon had a great chance to score as well. You can't be giving away those sort of leads away from home in the Premier League when you're looking to stay up. So, yeah, I think the results the team were getting and the poor form we started the season with didn't help in maybe his motivation. You know, he thinks he should be playing for a Champions League side, and he thought Fulham would maybe have the season that Wolves did. With the money spent, the quality of players it looked like we brought in, with the likes of, you know, we had Mitrovic in on a permanent, we had Andre Schürrle, he had him, you know, Anguissa came in, Luciano Vieso. So I think he was expecting more, and I think maybe just demotivated him, and he realised that this is just going to be a 1 year for him, and he'll still get a move to a decent European side come the summer.
Yeah, and in that respect, he's not strong enough to carry a midfield. I've always said it myself, he hasn't necessarily got a strength and brawn in him like a hard-hitting central midfielder should do, even like a Scotty Parker, someone that could run that department perfectly down to a T, and he doesn't have that. And the one thing that worries me about Seri is people are saying, oh, he's a great midfielder, he's got a lot of vision, you know, and a lot of creativity in him as well, but he doesn't have that hard-hitting element and edge that you need in the Championship if you're going to stand above... You know, they're typical working-class central midfielders that don't care about any kind of flair in your game. They just want to get out there and make their mark. And if it means leaving their mark physically on you, they will do. And he'll struggle in that environment. So, you know, in my opinion, we need to get him out the door now. Whether it's for 15, 20 million, however much it's going to cost, it's just good for the club.
So would you happily take a loss on him then? Because if it was 25 million, I mean, look, Fulham have got some money, not a shed load. And if you're taking a loss on a player that you've only had for one season, I mean, granted, his stock hasn't risen, certainly in that 12 months, it's got lower. But this is a player, realistically, you need to recoup what you paid for him, no?
I think so, but I also think you don't want him to be in and around the squad when you're preparing for the season, really. I said this when me and Guy were on last week, that when you're talking about Cessignon or you're talking about Seri, you kind of want them out of the club as soon as possible. So you just have the players you want to play for the team who are going to be in your core next season, all like playing with each other in training. I mean, if there's players who don't want to be there, you don't really want them in and around the thing. Obviously, he's at the African Cup of Nations at the moment, so he's not actually in pre-season training. But, you know, with Jean-Michel Seri, I think that one thing that, you know, didn't necessarily help us get, but I feel like he needed to be in a system that suited the way he wanted to play. You know, remember there were so many arguments at the beginning of the season, oh, can Kearney and Seri play in the same team? That's what we were discussing every single week. Like, oh, you've got to play one, not the other. If Seri's better than Kearney, should be playing Seri, but Kearney's obviously the club captain. So I think, you know, Seri, it hasn't worked out, but, you know, I still think we won't recoup all the money, but I still think we can recoup, you know, 15 or so million pounds for him. I think there'll still be top European sides after him. I mean, if you look at the teams that have been interested in this summer, you know, you've got Monaco, you've got Galatasaray, you've got Inter Milan, AC Milan, Napoli. I can't really see Napoli going in from Skin. They're just about to sign James Rodriguez from Real Madrid. But, you know, he is still linked with, you know, sides who are consistently in the Europa League and the Champions League.
So, if he does go out the door, I mean, we're going to be talking about transfers a bit later on in the show, but from the rumours that have been spreading recently of the most likely, I mean, what, Trevor Chalobah from Chelsea potentially could fill that role? I mean, I know he's a defensive-minded player as well, can play in central defence, but can also fill that void in the central midfield area, right?
Yeah, when I'm looking at our midfield, luckily we've technically still got the midfield who got us promoted. We've got Johansson, we've got McDonald, and we've got Kearney. So you'd imagine that would be our starting midfield three. But then you look beyond that, and then what is there?
I mean, we were always harping on about putting youth players into that mix a little bit more. You're right, I guess in that respect, we've only really got Matt O'Reilly that can step into the midfield and maybe shake things up a little bit. So we do need depth.
You need someone like when we had Ollie Norwood. You need someone like that. I think that, yes, Seri will be going that time. I don't think it's going to harm my field. Obviously, Anguissa could be staying at the club, although he's had a great African Cup of Nations, so that means there could be interest in rising in him this summer. But I do think that Seri, it is the most important thing here. Yes, we need to get a good amount of money, but I think it's simply we need to get him out the door as soon as possible.
We'll touch on this a bit later on in the show, of course, transfers and everything that goes around them as well, but hypothetically, if you were offered 15 million and in the same day a bid was lodged to sign Harry Arter or someone like that, would you take that? You know, Harry Arter's industrious. He's somebody that knows that division very well. And although there's not necessarily the same creativity that Seri has, he's somebody that can almost hold a midfield together like a Scotty Parker. I'll definitely take that.
If yeah, but if you look towards the end of last season, Seri wasn't even in the periphery.
He was a shadow, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He wasn't
so I don't, for me, we're not losing anything by selling Seri. We're getting £15 million back on a transfer that didn't work. And I think, yeah, I would just take that because I think Harry Arter, you know Scott Park quite. Is it their family related? Is it brother-in-law or something like that?
Brother-in-law.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, Harry Arter come in. He knows the championship very well. It would be a good signing to bring in. You know, if he scored the winner at Cardiff, that wouldn't go too much amiss. But I do think that for me, losing Seri has been inevitable, and I don't think we're missing anything because he didn't really have anything to show in the last third of last season when Scott Parker came in.
Yeah,
I think Harry Arter, to be fair, is a great shout. That would be a wonderful signing for that division. Look, I know he likes to pick up the occasional yellow card. We've seen that quite a lot.
Well, we get him in your Hampton holding, probably the worst disciplinary record in the league in holding midfield.
But that's what you need in a championship. You need someone that's going to get in their faces and make it difficult for them to progress through the midfield. So all for that, completely.
You mentioned Scott Parker there looking at youth. How important is that going to be next season? Do you think he's really going to delve into that market?
I'd like to think so, because there's a lot of talent at Motspur Park for us guys at the moment. You've got Marlon Fossey, there's Stephen Sessignon, who's really yet to be blooded. Like I say, Matt O'Reilly, even someone like Timmy Abraham coming into the striking regiment as well to add a little bit more dimension. He's a target man like Mitrovic is, but more of an aerial presence in that respect as well. So there's a lot for us to pick and choose from. It's just as and when they come about. I'd like to see them integrate into the squad in pre-season, of course, and maybe early stages of the Carabao Cup, and then move from there like it is perennially anyway. So we just like to see, but I'd love to see youth play a bit of a more predominant role next season for us, definitely.
Yeah, I totally agree, because we know how much quality there is in our youth setup. We've seen I know Ryan Sessions was like, it's a different case, but Matt O'Reilly has been in the last two pre-season tours, I believe, with Fulham, so he's definitely got the ability there. He's actually, he's quite physically built for a young man. He's 6'1", 6'2". He got moved further back in midfield last season. Obviously, he used to be like a number 10, sort of a Kearney type midfielder, but he was playing more of a deeper role last year, so that maybe will help us. And I do think, and it's finally nice actually to be prepared this week. We're finally starting to be linked with some players, because for the last month or so, it's been Sessignon's leaving, Seri's leaving, Mitrovic is leaving, everybody's leaving, blah, 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 blah. So it's been nice to see that, it's only been linked with players. But I do think youth will play a part, but I do think it is about bringing in some experienced championship players ahead of the season, because I do think we need that. I don't think necessarily we need too many players you're going to go straight into our starting team.
Yeah.
I think we've got quite a strong unit there. But I do think there is some squad depth that does need to be built in this transfer window.
Yeah, we don't want to be signing Thomas Eisfeldt again, really, do we? Like from Arsenal or anyone like that.
I think we have. I know Bristol City supposedly paid £8 million for Thomas Kalas, but if he was available for, let's say, £5 million, I don't think that would have been a good signing to make to bring some, squad depth in. I think that's where we need to build on in the transfer window. I don't think signing players who are going to make a complete difference next season is the most important thing, actually.
One of the key things, I think, is to sign players. And Rafa Benitez did this, right, when he was with Newcastle in the Championship. Rather than go into a foreign market that he probably knew a bit more about, he obviously trusted the people close to him and went with proven Championship players, the likes of Grant Hanley he brought in, Dwight Gale he brought in, who we will discuss later on as well. But that is potentially the right thing for Scott Parker to do, especially as he's played his whole career in the English game. He knows the market. So stay homegrown, stay what you know, basically. That is surely going to serve Fulham better.
Yeah, I've always said this, that, even when it came to the Premier League last season, we signed too many players who actually knew what the league's about. Yes, we signed some great quality players in Anguissa, who obviously got to the Europa League final in Marseille the season before. Jean-Michel Seri been linked with a move to Barcelona. But they don't know what it's like to scrap in the English game,
trying to
stay up in the Premier League or pushing for promotion, pushing the Championship. So I do believe that, buying within the English game is where we're going to find the, not necessarily the best value, but the most players are going to make the most impact for our team.
Yeah, and that's the formula you need going forward in the Championship. We're so cutthroat, difficult to prove yourself as a club anyway. So much competition, you need to have the squad that's there to grind out results when it really matters and not just have a little pirouette and a flick when they, sporadically feel like it's the best time to do so. So we'll see what this summer transfer brings. We'll talk about it later on during the show anyway, but it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds in the next couple of weeks.
There is optimism, right, guys? I want to feel optimism in this room.
Yeah.
You guys are optimistic about next season.
Yeah,
right?
Completely. Completely, we're going into a fairly broad pond, but as a pretty beaten up fish, but we're soon to get stronger, right? We know exactly what that environment's all about. We've been there, two top six finishes. One of them came to fruition last time we got promoted anyway. So, and I like to think that the club's in a better shape. You know, the guys behind closed doors, you know, you've got Tony Khan, which we spoke to last week on Fulhamish as well. He's got his head screwed on. He's alive to the pressures and strains which come with Championship football. So we're in a better shape, and we've got much, you know, we got a better plan for that too next season.
Yeah, I do think if you look at the players we've got, we've pretty much got minus Matt Target and probably Ryan Sessegnon, right? And Fredericks, but you've got Christie playing right back there. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the team who won the playoff final. They're still there. Team who got us promoted are pretty much still there, apart from two or three players. So I think it's not about there's no need for an overhaul. The only overhaul that's needed is to get some players out of the club. But I think that, you know, when it comes to bring players in, it's just to adapt and get players who are going to suit the squad chemistry we've got now. I don't think, you know, it's the end. It's like we went down in 13-14 where it was absolute car crash. I do think the core to, you know, a good team who can challenge for the top six and the top two is there.
Yeah, completely. Get rid of Seri, but keep Kamara. That's what I'm going to say. I want Kamara to be there next season.
Abubakar Kamara.
Love
him. Yeah, keep him.
Love him. We need him in the squad. He's not in the Premier League.
Is this banter?
No. If you look,
no.
Two most important.
We missed him.
Two most important games of last season. He started. Not last season. In the season we got promoted. He started the second leg and he started the final. I don't see why he offers something that no other players do. He's so quick and getting down the line. Yes, he doesn't know what to do once he gets down the line, but for me, in the Championship, he is a vital asset. I'm not saying he should be starting every single week, but I do think he's a player would be very useful to have in the squad.
He's that juggernaut you need, just running at defenders and marauding around.
If he doesn't know what he's going to do, they're not going to know what he's going to do. So
yeah, his unpredictability is a blessing. We need to, you know, really take that under our wing.
Well, I will be blowed by that, chaps. I'm honestly, I'm genuinely surprised by that. He seems like a player that you see from the outside. You wouldn't think that fans would be a massive.
It is very split. I will say that, but I do think he has got a part to play in our promotion challenge for next season.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Maybe some more Kamara chat after the break, but we're also going to be touching on the two Sessegnons.
This is Love Sport.
Yep, this is Love Sport, and this is the Fulham Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and the guys from Fulhamish, Dom and Cam. We are going to be talking about Ryan Sessegnon now and his brother Stephen Sessegnon as well. Rumour has it, Spurs don't just want one, they want two.
They want double bubble, don't they?
Yeah, well, obviously, friend of the pod, Dean Jones, tweeted about this yesterday, and it's like, that's what's apparently holding up the deal. If Spurs want both Sessegnon brothers. No, mate, you're not getting both of them.
No, mate. That's how Fulham should go back. Well, no, mate.
It's not working. We don't even know what Stephen's really about, so lay off him. Let us have him for a couple of seasons before he come in with a nice 60 million bid, all right? Chill out.
Yeah, because obviously you're Spurs. You always take our best players anyway. So you'll be able to get him in a couple of seasons once he's had some time to play for us. But I think with Ryan Sessegnon, I think they put all their focus into the Tanguy and Ndombele transfer, which they should, because they need a player like him, Spurs. Yeah. You know, ever since Moussa Dembele left, they haven't had that legs in midfield to drive from one area. So yes, I know you've got Moussa Sissoko, but he's been playing, you know, all over. I think Tanguy and Ndombele has been a great transfer for them. But I think now they've got that and Jack Clark deal over the line, they're going to be looking to Ryan Sessegnon and trying to get over the line. Because from our perspective, yes, from a fan, we don't see the money that comes in, but we don't want to see one of our best ever youth prospects go on a free transfer next summer.
Well, that's it. And obviously, Jack Clark's gone straight back to Leeds, hasn't he? So there's still a void there to be filled. Would Ryan Sessegnon start? He demands starting football for me. I can't bear to see him go to Tottenham next season and just languish on the bench.
I don't want to see him in a Spurs shirt, I'm being honest.
No.
I'm not convinced this is the right move for him. Listen,
it's
I know
not.
That he had a fantastic season, right? Above and beyond when you guys got promoted. Last season, you used the word car crash earlier to describe Seri, I think, or Andre Schürrle. It wasn't a great season for him. For some reason, Claudio Ranieri didn't seem to fancy him. We were all buzzing about this young English talent coming into the Premier League, and it just wasn't there.
But then, in that respect, you know, two goals and I think six assists for an 18-year-old in Premier League, that's not bad going, really.
Mm. Yeah, I think when it came to under-21 players in the top five leagues, the only player who was ahead of him on assists was Jadon Sancho.
Yeah.
I honestly do think another year or two of him. Like I said, you know, when he came through at 16 and he was putting in great performances, like when he did away at Newcastle when he won 3-0, I think stay to his 21.
Yeah.
And then go on. Because you just have those 3 or 4 years of football. You know, he's played, what, 100-odd games for Fulham and he's, what, only just turned 19? So I do think that yeah, move to Tottenham or even to a big club isn't necessarily the greatest thing for him, but there's been interest from abroad as well. Apparently at the under-21s, Inter had a scout there, and Antonio Conte seemed to think he could slot in at left wing back in his, obviously, his 3-5-2 system. But yeah, as you say, Matt, I don't necessarily think this is the best move for his career, because if he's just going to be sitting on the bench every week, is it going to stall? Is his career going to stall?
It's such a critical part and time of his career. You're right, you know, he's an impressionable professional that's been around for a few years anyway, but when you're coming into your physical peak at the age of 19 to maybe even, you know, 23, 24, that's when you need to have week in, week out games, and that's when your confidence grows and, you know, you take everything in your stride then. And to have him playing week in, week out football for Fulham, to go into, you know, Tottenham sitting on the bench and getting a cup game against Bury or someone like that, it's just going to nosedive his career. So he needs to be careful. But he seems like a guy that's got a very level head on his shoulders regardless. So,
well, if anybody knows this better than anyone, it's Scott Parker, right? I mean, slightly older probably than Ryan Sessegnon was. But when he moved to Chelsea from Charlton, he was a young lad, didn't get the game time. His career stalled. Eventually he brought it back with Newcastle and West Ham and Spurs and the rest of it, and Fulham, of course. But he should surely be in Ryan Sessegnon's ear saying, look, you didn't have a great season last season, but now you've got the platform again in the Championship to go again.
Yeah, I think Ryan Sessegnon's probably got it into his head that he's a Premier League player now. He wants to be playing in the Premier League.
Do you think he really believes that?
I think he does believe he's good enough to play in the Premier League, which I do think he is. But I do think, and what harm would another year in the Championship really do him? If he signs, let's say, a two-year extension with Fulham, let's say, and let's say we don't get promoted, then there's the agreement he can go next season. I don't see what another season championship is really going to do him any harm. If anything, it will do him better, because then he can get his confidence back, because, you know, he knows how good he is at the level of the Championship. Yeah. He can prove himself. And, you know, people do forget he's only just turned 19. He's not exactly like, you know, 22, 23.
Well, that's it. And I touch.
It's not like Jack Grealish, where he's getting to this stage where if Villa didn't come out, he would probably have to move on for the betterment of his career. Ryan Sessegnon is still extremely young. He's still got another at least 2 years playing for the England under-21s, for crying out loud.
If it's going to be that way, we're going to lose Ryan in the summer. I've harped on about this for weeks and weeks and months on end. In any deal, we've got to seek a loan back clause, because if he was given the opportunity to move to Tottenham, but also given the opportunity for one more season to prove himself at Fulham and maybe even get us promoted again, he'll take that. I'm sure he would. So a loan back clause would be perfect if we're going to sell him.
Does that do Fulham any huge favours, though? And with regards to his season last year, I don't think his stock has particularly risen. I know he's a young, exciting prospect, but if you look at his performance last season, so is it not worth Fulham keeping hold of him and then probably getting double the amount that you could have done this summer?
That all depends on whether he signs a contract extension or not as well. Like, it all hinges on that. So it's going to be very shrewd operating the next couple of weeks to see what actually happens with him. But I've always said that if he's going to leave, whatever will be, but a loan-back clause would be the best way forward for both parties, without a doubt, because he's not, in my eyes, going to get the game time he's expecting at Tottenham next season. But at Fulham, with a fresh sense of enthusiasm, knowing that he's got an opportunity and a platform to prove himself once again, going back to Tottenham almost as a new signing the season after, with, you know, a new vigour in his game and a bit more of a stead going forward as well, it'll be positive for his career.
A left-back by trade, Ryan Sessegnon, right? Is that how we're going to describe him?
I don't really know how to describe what position he is. Because if I'm looking at him going to a top side, or going to like an Inter Milan or a Spurs, he's not going to be playing in behind Harry Kane. He's not going to be playing in behind Mario Icardi or Romelu Lukaku, whoever they decide to play. So I think, you know, I do think in the future his best position will not actually be at left wing. I do feel like it will be dropping back. I feel like that. He's such an instinctive player that I feel like he will eventually get moved. But yes, he was so good in the Championship because he was given the space. But he's not given that space in the Premier League and at the highest level. So I don't know if he will move into becoming one of the number 11. He might end up moving back into a left-back. Maybe a left-wing-back spot is maybe the best option for him here.
I was saying, I believe his makeup is a left-wing-back. You know, going forward, he's got innate qualities. But defensively, as we've already touched on, is he a left-back by trade? He's got that, you know, ground into his personal game from a very young age of actually tracking players and positional play as well. So in the next couple of seasons, I'd like to see him personally play more left wing. I think he's got a great spark going forward and he makes things happen. But then again, he's also effective whilst tracking back too. So as a modern left wing back, or, you know, a wing back in general, you need that engine, and that's only going to grow in him. He's only 19 years of age. So with experience, it breeds that kind of physicality. So we've just got to see.
I feel like that's where his progression has been stunted, Sessegnon, in the sense that just play him as a left-back. That's what should have been happening for the past two seasons. Just play him as a left-back, let him grow into that position, and then slowly but surely it's a natural evolution, like we saw with Gareth Bale at Spurs. Started as a left-back at Southampton, started as a left-back, came to Spurs. OK, he didn't have a great start to his campaign at Spurs, but he eventually got better and better and better. So I think if you put Sessegnon as a left-back and just have him play there for a season or two, he's only going to both improve defensively and gradually, like he did in the Championship the season before last, break forward.
I mean, and that, you know, with that touched on, where does Joe Bryan stand with that? Could he even play further up the field? Because he's got a great final ball on him. And if we were going to play left, you know, Sessegnon on left back, then they've got two defensive minds there that can just work off each other. So we keep forgetting that we have got someone like Joe Bryan in the squad now, which is so versed at Championship level. You can't really compromise on that. And the only way I see Sessegnon fitting into the squad next season, like it was last year, if he is to stay, is playing across the front three. That's all I see it as. So,
just a word on Stephen, his brother. How much do the pair of you know about him? And what would this mean for Fulham if you did let him go to Spurs this summer?
He's an under-17 World Cup winner. And he was pivotal for England along the right side. He was always overlapping and making it difficult for oppositions to track him, and also chipping him with the odd assist as well, especially in the final against Spain. He's got a huge pedigree. He's got a lot to live up to with Ryan as well. But I'm sure, being twins and that sibling rivalry, he wants to better Ryan, but also make his name at a club which can genuinely trust him, like Fulham can. And I think Ryan's maybe grown a little bit disillusioned with that. He's hit the heights of his career a little bit earlier than what Stephen has, so maybe he is looking at pastures new. But those two, if they were to stay at the club, they'd definitely get opportunities to prove himself. And I think Stephen, he's a utilitable player. He can also play centre-half as well as right-back. He's quite a physical guy. He's got
He's a lot more defensively minded than Ryan.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can't be worse than Cyrus Christie.
Precisely.
I've said this time and time again. He can't be worse, because I don't want to know what's worse than Cyrus Christie playing right back. So, it was so many times last season, I was like, just start him at right back. We can't defend any worse than we really were.
Just give Stephen a go. You know, a young, impressionable character getting onto that pitch and, once again, I've said it a few times this show, but stamping a claim on the first team football and really getting out there and proving that he's just as good as Ryan as well. It can only be good for everybody involved in the club if he's actually given game time next season. I fully expect to see it, because, as Domras already said, Cyrus Christie, where do we go with him, really?
Hopefully he just goes. I mean, I think that's the best option here. Because, yeah, that's, as I said, we'll get on the transfer rumours later, but it is a bit weird we haven't been linked with any right-backs, and our only right-back we seem to be playing is terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we will indeed be getting onto transfers in a couple of minutes, Dom. We will be discussing Pontus Janssen, Dwight Gale, Ezri Konsa, Charlie Austin from Southampton after the break.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Hello, this is the Fulham Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and the Fulhamish guys, Dom and Cam. We're into the final stretch, guys, and we're talking transfers, because why not? It is the transfer window, and it's what everyone is talking about. Now, we've got a few names here, a few I'm going to throw at you. The first one is Pontus Janssen from Leeds.
I mean, I'd just love to sign him just to wind up Leeds fans, personally.
I'd love to sign him just for the fact to be another housery kind of player in that squad as well.
Yeah, what?
Just housery. He's very good. Him and Johansson would get
like
on. We'll get on perfectly fine. I mean, but no, I think he's been linked away because obviously the whole thing with the crazy Aston Villa game between them and Leeds last season, and the way I think Biel said he disobeyed him by trying to tackle, was it Albert Adoma?
Yeah.
Who scored the goal for Villa. So, you know, he's linked with us. I think it'd be a good signing. You know, him and Morton at the back could be a good partnership. But I'd like to say more than anything, just to wind up Leeds fans again. It's just fun.
He's also been linked with Sheffield United, though. So who would it annoy more, you know, if he was to go to Sheffield or to us? I mean, I think they'd be a lot more aggrieved if it was Sheffield,
but,
right?
Yeah, but then he's leaving them for the Premier League then.
Yeah.
Whereas he's leaving them for another championship, like McCormack
did. Which they're
did.
Facing the Championship. Yeah, exactly.
But no, Pontus Janssen, I think, would be a good sign. I don't think there's been any fee linked. I think it's just been a rumour so far, and he's been quite tight-lipped about it. But yeah, Pontus Janssen would be a good addition to our defence. And I know we've got Mawson, Le Marchand, Ream, Adoy. But I think another strong physical guy at the back, because if you're looking at it, Mawson's the only guy you see as that big, strong physical player at the back, and obviously he's very injury prone.
I'd much rather have Pontus Janssen next to Mawson and Le Marchand next season, put it that way. So if there's any, you know, proof in the pudding and transfers, then get him through the door. Get him through the door now. We need that kind of defenderless use who
he knows the
strains and
as
pressures.
Well.
Yeah, exactly. He's hard hitting.
I think you're bang on what you say about that game with Aston Villa, because that was brilliant. Regardless of that whole situation and what should and shouldn't have happened, he didn't want to concede that goal.
No.
He absolutely didn't want to concede that goal. And that's just from within, of going, no, hang on, we're letting this team score a goal. Whether we've done wrong is irrelevant. I don't want to concede a goal.
That's just professionality shining through, isn't it? And that's exactly what you want as a football player. You don't want them just to listen to vapid orders. You want them to take it on the chin sometimes and stand up for what they really believe in as well. And he's definitely that kind of character that, you know, if we were to have him in the squad next season, will definitely see us through and benefit us as well. So, yeah, I like that. I like that rumour. It's an interesting one, quite an exciting one.
Yeah, it sort
of
came out of nowhere. You know, there's some links here which, you know, you can expect these players to be linked to a team like Fulham. Whereas Pontus Janssen sort of just came out of the blue. Was it yesterday? I think it wasn't. It was okay, then nice. But it wasn't like a rumour that sometimes there's been murmurs before, and that it just came out of the blue.
Well, it's almost, you know, we've been linked with a few defenders, but even someone like Chema Rodriguez as well from Levante. He's a very highly regarded in La Liga as well, and he's got a good record and defensive record.
But last time he brought a player from Spain, it was Marcelo Giallo.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're not getting any more players from Spain.
Marketed as ex-Juventus and ex-Real Madrid player who's barely played any games whatsoever.
We sent him on loan to a team like the third or fourth tier of Spain. They wanted to send him back.
Extra Ramirez or whatever it was, right? Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You mentioned Alfie Mawson there as a partner to Alfie Mawson. That move didn't quite work out last season, right? We're expecting better things from him next season.
I think the injury was a massive sort of issue in why people don't think he had a good season. I think just before he got injured, we were playing really well defensively. Obviously, we got the clean sheet away from Newcastle. We drew 1-1, which you probably should have beaten Wolves at home. We beat Huddersfield 1-0. I think there was some sort of progress in our defence there. Then Mawson got injured and it completely fell apart again. I think if he can somehow stay fit, I think he's a player to build around, and I think, you know, he's got those leadership qualities, and I think him and, if we look at someone like Pontus Janssen, that they would build a great partnership together, because I think Reem's injury last summer really rocked him. He didn't look like the same player when he came back.
No, I think so. He had the stuffing knocked out of him a little bit, and next season, once again, Tim Reem next to Alfie Mawson, that's once again quite a tantalising partnership, but is he going to be the same player we saw in the last couple of seasons? Obviously, he's not getting any younger either. So, yeah, maybe it's just time to freshen it up in that department.
Behind those two, we haven't actually discussed this. I know that we weren't going to discuss this, but I feel like it's important to bring it up. Goalkeepers.
Marek Rodak coming back into the squad as well. He said he's going to be a part of the squad next season. He had two successful loan spells at Rotherham. I see him being, as you know, more than worthy enough competition for Bettinelli.
Yeah,
I don't think
he's a backup to Bettinelli. I think he's someone there to properly challenge Marcus Bettinelli. Obviously, you've still got Fabbri still on the books as well.
What a bizarre signing. I mean, look, that the start of last season was crazy with regards to goalkeepers, because he signed Fabbri, you had Bettinelli, Sergio Rico came in, and it seemed like Jokanović just had to blame a certain position in order to justify the bad form, and he just chose goalkeepers. And for what, about 8 games into the season, you'd used 3 already.
Yeah, and our goalkeeper coach mysteriously just left as well. So it was a very odd situation. And Fabbri, you know, when he played, right, I think he got a lot of more stick. Yes, there was a couple of goals like the Zaha goal in the Palace game that he possibly could have done better on. But I think if you're looking at like the amount of saves the goalkeeper made in the game, I think his is like the highest average out of all the three goalkeepers. You know, but I do think he will be off in the summer, whether he's going back to Turkey, whether he's going somewhere in Spain. Marcus Bettinelli, for me, I want to see him as our first choice goalkeeper for next season. He hasn't done anything wrong. I don't think he did anything wrong to be dropped for Sergio Rico. But when Sergio Rico came in, you could see why he was our best goalkeeper. But Marcus Bettinelli, I think it's a great time to bring him. You know, he was in two or three England squads last season. I know he's there as a fourth goalkeeper for like the Nations League, which isn't necessarily needed, but it shows that he is in Southgate's plans. And I do think Marcus Bettinelli should be our starting goalkeeper this season, and Marcus Rodak will push him all the way, because he was probably one of Rotherham's better players last season.
Yeah, he was. He's highly regarded up in Rotherham as well. They actually were really sad to see him go. They wanted to have him back for a third season even, but you know, if you've got that kind of regard as a young goalkeeper, he's only 22 years of age, then he's going to want to press on at his parent club, and it can only be good for us in that respect that we have two goalkeepers that are experienced and fully versed in the Championship that just want that number one jersey. So, yeah, it's exciting times in that regard as well. So carry on, boys. Just get that battle going.
Okay, well, the next two I'm going to mention may have a lot to do with whether Alexander Mitrovic moves on or not. But Dwight Gayle from Newcastle and Charlie Austin from Southampton. Now, Dwight Gayle, for me, just seems like he's tailor-made for Fulham. Proven in the Championship, gets goals. This is a perfect signing, no?
It's a differing dimension to what Mitrovic brings to you as well, because Dwight Gayle's got that little burst of pace that can get beyond defenders, whereas Mitrovic is somebody that likes to have the ball at feet and to hold people off and act as like a hub for midfielders to work off. So, in that regard, the two of them together,
could that work?
Not work together, but I think it would be great competition. I know that one of them is going to have to be sat on the bench each week and coming on as a bit of an impact player.
That is the main point. I can't see how, if we did keep Mitrovic, how him and Gayle would work together. I don't think we'd sign Gayle to play him on the left wing.
No.
And I can't see us not playing a 4-3-3. So I don't know. I feel like Dwight Gayle and Charlie Austin, 100%, I think we're only going to go in for him if Mitrovic was to leave. Yeah. I think he'd be more an adequate replacement. I think he is a very solid striker. It would probably wind up QPR fans to the end of the world, yeah. So that'd be quite funny. But I think Dwight Gayle, he's one of those players who can bag 20 goals in the Championship and can't hit a barn door with a banjo in the Premier League. So, you know, there's so many players who fall into that gap, you know. So I think they're good Championship players who are positive that we'll be unlinked with them, but I just can't see us splashing like £15 million out for Dwight Gayle if we've got Alexander Mitrovic, because I just don't see where he's going to work. I'd rather sign an out-and-out winger. I don't know if he's got a club yet, but Albert Adoma is available on a free transfer.
Definitely.
So I don't understand why, if he's going to be pushed out wide, I wouldn't go for someone like him. But I do think it is nicely wide winged with two high-quality Championship-level strikers.
But even British Sombalonga as well has been linked with us and touted for a move for us for a couple of weeks now, you know. But he's somebody for me that demands first-team football, and he's not going to be happy with sitting
on
the bench.
All these players demand first-team football, and I just can't see them getting it.
But that's the worrying thing. We're not really getting an auxiliary player in that sense that he's quite happy and coming on and being an impact. We need to be locating a striker, maybe, you know, coming into their late 20s, but I know that's not a policy at all, just somebody that's quite happy, you know, just coming and shaking things up, but more than happy enough to sit on the bench. And that's going to be a difficult thing in the Championship, especially with someone like Mitrovic.
But we do need a backup striker, because the only other forward options at the moment as a number nine is probably Rufont.
And is he going to play in the Championship? The PSG Slayer. Like,
exactly.
Come on.
Well, I mean, look, we often talk about stats now in football, and if you take Dwight Gayle on stats alone, yes, his record at Newcastle in the Premier League, at Palace in the Premier League, wasn't brilliant. But if you look at his record in the Championship with West Brom, 24 goals last season. With Newcastle a couple of seasons before that, it was 23 goals. So this is a guy that does get goals. So you almost know that by signing him, you're near enough guaranteed 20-plus goals. Is that not enough to want a player?
Yeah, but would it be enough for him? Like, because we've got someone like Mitrovic that can also bag goals for fun, and he works in our system already. He doesn't need to get bedded in or get used to a new philosophy. So having those two in the same squad is a dream. Ideally, it would be the best striking partnership you could possibly have, to have one or the other coming off the bench and just making it extremely difficult for defenders. But it's just not going to work. You know, they're both going to want that first team undisputed starting spot. And as much as it's great for competition, it's just going to cause unneeded friction. So,
okay, so where are we at on Mitro at the moment?
I think he's going to stay.
I think he's staying.
Do you really?
I don't think he's going to push for a move. It's more that I can't see another team coming in and paying the money that we're going to ask for. Right, you're going to have to match or make his £90,000 a week wages higher. You're going to have to pay at least £30 million as far as I'm concerned, because they've gone for £20 million last year. So, and the only teams I can really see go after him who could probably get him is either West Ham or Crystal Palace.
Yeah, if West Ham get rid of someone like Arnautovic this summer as well, it's kind of a tailor-made replacement.
Absolutely, it looks very likely.
I can only see him going to a Premier League side. I don't think a team from the continent would afford his wages, and I think West Ham had, especially Palace, if they sold Wan-Bissaka, and even if they let go of Zaha now, you never have the money to spend. So I do think if he is going to go, it's probably going to be between West Ham and Crystal Palace. But I am quite confident that, you know, he wants to stay at the club, and, you know, he wants to play for us next season.
He's got a point to prove. He really has got a point to prove in the Championship as well. Having a full season there, being the figurehead and spearhead to our attack, and ideally bagging 40 goals or something next season would be fantastic. So I can totally see him doing that with a bit between his teeth. But He wants to get us back to the Premier League. He loves the club. He's got an affiliation. He's got a great affinity with the fans as well. So I don't really see him going to another club, because He's also a temperamental character, you've got to understand. He's got to be around people and the staff that understand how he works and ticks as a professional and as a person as well. So it's just gauging expectation for him.
Okay, last but not least, we've got 30 seconds left. Ezri Konsa, slightly controversial, coming over from Brentford.
Yeah, one Brentford. Yeah, one Brentford. Take him in. Another solid ball-playing centre-back at the back.
Yeah, he's like a Joe Gomez, isn't he, really? He's just someone that's so comfortable to ball at his feet. And just to get one up on the boys from Brentford as well.
Boys from Middlesex.
Yeah, thanks, guy.
What a great way to end this show. Fellas, thanks for joining me. It has been nothing but a pleasure. This was the Fulham Fan Show. We'll see you next week.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.